Hello, I'm Pastor Steve. You are listening to EuroFolkRadio.com. We are privileged to bring you the Christian identity message to the dispersed people of true Israel, wherever they might be. We also bring you news and current events, health information, political commentary, and a little humor thrown in. We are glad that you could join us, and may Yahweh bless and keep you. Praise Yahweh.
See God's ark a-moving, see God's ark a-moving. Picks me up on my lonely days and carries me through tomorrow. The rain came up hard, you know, and the wind began to blow. And I lifted my voice up into the sky and cried mercy to my soul. See God's ark a-moving, see God's ark a-moving. Picks me up on my lonely days and carries me through tomorrow. God must have felt my faith. He held me till it was safe. And I never again drew a doubting breath, cause he delivered me from my death. See God's ark a-moving, see God's ark a-moving. Picks me up on my lonely days and carries me through tomorrow. Temptation, if you just can't put it down, when the ark sets sail on the rolling sea, you're gonna fall overboard and drown. See God's ark a-moving, see God's ark a-moving. Picks me up on my lonely days and carries me through tomorrow. Picks me up on my lonely days and carries me through tomorrow.
Here I lay up on my dying pillow. Round my bed I see those tear-dimmed eyes. They are watching the saddest thing that can happen. They're seeing a sinner as he dies. Me.
Thank you.
Shalom Aleichem to all my pure-blooded white Christian Israelite brothers and sisters out there. I've sort of changed things around a little bit this morning. This is Word for Word. I'm Pastor Steve. And this Word for Word is for the 16th of April 2018. And it is my 370th Word for Word show. I did opened with a little different gospel music. I'm giving Tennessee Ernie Ford a little rest. This show is pre-recorded. I have just come back from Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. A great time of rejoicing. And I hope you kept it with us, brothers and sisters. It's a commanded feast. And in these last days, we need to be very, very observant of Yahweh's requirements. We can't fudge around with it. We're running out of time. The fence sitters are running out of time. I'm reading from the Apocrypha these days. I finished the Old Testament and the book of Jasher and the book of Tobit. Now I am going to start in the book of what they call Judith, but there's no J in the Hebrew alphabet. This is from the Greek, and it's been anglicized, so to speak it in English, they use a J, but it's Yahudith. It is a female Judahite that is used as a proper name, okay? Because Yahuda is he who praised Yah. Yahudith is the female of that. That is the feminine gender of that. Yahudim are those who praise Yah. That is the tribe of Yahuda. It is not Judah, Judea, or any of that stuff with the J, because they have tried to steal that definition and turn it into the word Jew, which is incorrect. There's no such word. That word was inserted in scriptures way later. They never existed before. It's a manufactured word, like Gentile. That's not in there. So let's get into this historical perspective of this book. All of these are intertestamental writings and gives the historical perspective from individual viewpoints. My website is https://www.pastor-steve.com. All my shows are there in archive. You can download them and listen to them at your leisure, okay, in case you have missed some. There's no interaction, there's no possible trolling. I don't have time to oversee that. So let's get started in the first chapter of this book of Yahudit. I'm going to pronounce it that way. Because that is the proper Hebrew pronunciation of this, and the Greek, this is written about Hebrew people, okay? chapter 1, verse 1. It was the 12th year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, that's how it's pronounced. Who ruled over Asher, that's the Assyrians, in the great city of Nineveh. In those days, Arphaxad ruled over the Medes and Ecbatana. Now, I'm not going to announce verse numbers. It's going to slow down the read and distract from what's being said. You'll just have to follow along with me. Don't worry about verse numbers, okay? I'm not going to go there in a lot of these books. He built walls around Ecbatana with hewn stones, 3 cubits thick and 6 cubits long. He made the walls 70 cubits high and 50 cubits wide. At its gates he raised towers 100 cubits high and 60 cubits wide at the foundations. He made its gates 70 cubits high and 40 cubits wide to allow his armies to march out in force and his infantry to form their ranks. Then King Nebuchadnezzar made war against King Arphaxad in the great plain that is on the borders of Ragau. There rallied to him all the people of the hill country and all those who lived along the Euphrates, the Tigris, and the Hydaspes. Those are rivers. And on the plain, Arioch, king of the Elymians. Thus, many nations joined the forces of the Chaldeans. Okay. This is Nebuchadnezzar issues ultimatums. Then Nebuchadnezzar, king of Asher, or the Assyrians, sent messengers to all who lived in Paras, that's Persia, and to all who lived in the west, though who lived in Cilicia and Damascus, that's Damasek, okay, in what is known as Syria today, Lebanon and Anti-Lebanon. I don't know where, this is written in the Greek, in between, okay? And all who lived along the seacoast, and those from among the nations of Carmel and Gilead and Upper Galilee and the great plain of Esdraelon, now that's right, and all who were in Samaria, that's Shomeron, that's next to Jerusalem, and its towns, and beyond the Arden, that's the Jordan River, as far as Jerusalem, and Bethany, and Kelos, and Kadesh, and the river of Egypt, that would be the Nile, okay, and Tachpanes, and Raamses, and the whole land of Goshen, that's all of Egypt's, even beyond Tanis and Memphis, and all who lived in Mitzrayim, that's Egypt, as far as the borders of Cush, that would be Ethiopia in the English, which is incorrect. That's wrong. Verse 11. So I'll give you a reference point, okay? But all who lived in the whole region disregarded the summons of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Asher, that's the Assyrians, and refused to join him in the war, for they were not afraid of him, but regarded him as only one man, or a man, okay? So they sent back his messengers empty-handed and in disgrace. Then Nebuchadnezzar became very angry with this whole region and swore by his throne and kingdom that he would take revenge on the whole territory of Cilicia and Damascus and Syria, that he would kill with his sword also all the inhabitants of the land of Moab and the people of Ammon and all Judea. Now that's Yehuda, okay, the land, the territory of Yehuda, and everyone in Mizraim, that's Egypt, as far as the coast of the two seas. That's Nebuchadnezzar. In the 17th year, he led his forces against King Arphaxad and defeated him in battle. Overthrowing the whole army of Arphaxad and all his cavalry and all his chariots. Thus he took possessions of his towns and came to Ecbatana, captured its towers, plundered its markets, and turned its glory into disgrace. He captured Arphaxad in the mountains of Ragau and struck him down with his spears, thus destroying him once and for all. Then he returned to Nineveh, he and all his combined forces, a vast body of troops, and there he and his forces rested and feasted for 120 days. Okay? That ends chapter 1 of this book. Now we're going to go into chapter 2. I don't know how many chapters I'm going to do each session. I played a little extra country music when I got started just because I was into it, and I want to change things up a little bit. I've been doing the same routine for a long time, and I want to put some new music in. Oh, I'll still use Tennessee Ernie Ford, but I want to get some other stuff in too. A little Chet Atkins and some other real good country artists and gospel people. There's so much out there. I'd like to keep it rolling, keep it interesting, and not get stuck in a rut. This chapter 2. In the 18th year, on the 22nd day of the first month, there was talk in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Asher, that's the Assyrians, about carrying out his revenge on the whole region, just as he had said. He summoned all his ministers and all his nobles and set before them his secret plan and recounted fully with his own lips all the wickedness of the region. And the meaning of the Greek here is not certain, okay? They decided that everyone who had not obeyed his command should be destroyed. I guess it was wicked to him, okay? When he had completed his plan, Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Assyrians, or Asher, called Holofernes, the chief general of his army, second only to himself, and said to him, "Thus says the great king, the Lord of the whole earth." Talk about an ego. "Leave my presence and take with you men confident in their strength, 120,000 foot soldiers and 12,000 cavalry. March out against all the land to the west because they disobeyed my orders. Tell them to prepare earth and water, for I am coming against them in my anger and will cover the whole face of the earth, that would probably be land, okay, with the feet of my troops, to whom I will hand them over to be plundered. Their wounded shall fill their ravines and gullies, and the swelling river shall be filled with their dead. I will lead them away captive to the ends of the whole earth or land. You shall go and seize all their territory for me in advance. They must yield themselves to you, and you shall hold them for me until the day of their punishment. But to those who resist, show no mercy, but hand them over to slaughter and plunder throughout the whole region. For as I live, and by the power of my kingdom, what I have spoken I will accomplish by my own hand. And you, take care not to transgress any of your Lord's commands, but carry them out exactly as I have ordered you. Do it without delay. Boy, did he have an ego. Man, what a swelled head. Get a little drink of coffee. Okay, this is verse 14 of chapter 2, so you can get a reference if you're reading in the Apocrypha. So Holofernes left the presence of his Lord and summoned all the commanders, generals, and officers of the Assyrian army. That's the army of Ashur. He mustered the picked troops, by divisions, as his Lord had ordered him to do, 120,000 of them, all together with 12,000 archers on horseback, horse archers. Boy, they were deadly back then. And he organized them as a great army is marshaled for a campaign. He took along a vast number of camels and donkeys and mules for transport, and innumerable sheep and oxen and goats for food. The army travels on its stomach, remember? Also ample rations for everyone and a huge amount of gold and silver from the royal palace, in case they had to buy anything. Then he set out with his whole army to go ahead of King Nebuchadnezzar and to cover the whole face of, it would be the land, but they have the earth to the west, with their chariots and cavalry and picked foot soldiers. Along with them went a mixed crowd like a swarm of locusts, like the dust of the earth. Or sand. The Greek has sand, okay? A multitude that could not be counted. Camp followers, in other words. And they would do all kinds of stuff. They'd sell and an army. They had a whole bunch of people going with them. Just going along for the ride. They marched for 3 days from Nineveh to the plain of Bechtilat, and camped opposite Bechtilat near the mountain that is to the north of Upper Cilicia. From there, Holofernes took. They tend to put names in here where the Greek just says he, referring to Holofernes. Took his whole army, the infantry, cavalry, and chariots, and went up into the hill country. He ravaged Put and Lud and plundered all the Rassisites and the Ishmaelites on the border of the desert, south of the country of the Chaldeans. Okay. I have to move these pages. This is real small print. Then he followed or crossed the Euphrates and passed through Mesopotamia and destroyed all the fortified towns along the brook Abron as far as the sea. He also seized the territory of Cilicia and killed everyone who resisted him. Then he came to the southern borders of Japheth, facing Arabia. He surrounded all the Midianites and burned their tents and plundered their sheepfolds. He was just attacking everybody. Then he went down into the plain of Damascus, that's Damascus, during the wheat harvest, and burned all their fields and destroyed their flocks and herds and sacked their towns and ravaged their lands and put all their young men to the sword. Oh, this guy was horrible. So fear and dread of him fell upon all the people who lived along the seacoast at Sidon and Tyre, and those who lived in Shur and Osina, and all who lived in Yamnia, those who lived in Azotus and Ascalon feared him greatly. Well, I guess he was going along just killing everybody. I mean, he was just slaughtering people left and right. And that ends chapter 2. So now we get into chapter 3. They therefore sent messengers to him to sue for peace, and in these words, "We, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, the great king, lie prostrate before you. Do with us whatever you will. See, our buildings and all our land and all our wheat fields and our flocks and herds and all our encampments." In the Greek, it says all the sheepfolds of our tents. Okay. "Lie before you. Do with them as you please. Our towns and their inhabitants are also your slaves. Come and deal with them as you see fit." They just wimped out. "Oh, please don't hurt us." Weren't fighting. They're just going to let him do whatever they want. Well, that's what's going on today. We're letting these Edomites do whatever they want. Verse 5, "The men came to Holofernes and told him all this. Then he went down to the seacoast with his army and stationed garrisons in the fortified towns and took picked men from them as auxiliaries. These people and all in the countryside welcomed him with garlands and dances and tambourines. Yet he demolished all their shrines in the Greek heads' borders, all their borders, and cut down their sacred groves." Shrines makes more sense here. That's a Syriac. "For he had been commissioned to destroy all the gods of the land, so that all nations should worship Nebuchadnezzar alone." He was setting himself up as a god. "And that all their dialects and tribes should call upon him as a god." Now that's some serious ego. What can I say about that? "Then he came toward Esdraelon near Dothan, facing the great ridge of Yehuda," that's Judea, Okay? The land of Judea. He camped between Geba and Scythopolis and remained for a whole month in order to collect all the supplies for his army. Again, an army moves on its stomach. And that ends chapter 3. Now we're going to go into chapter 4 here. Verse 1. When the Israelites living in Judea heard of everything that Holofernes, the general of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Asher, the Assyrians, had done to the nations, and how he had plundered and destroyed all their temples, they were greatly terrified at his approach, and they were alarmed both for Jerusalem and for the temple of Yahweh. Now they have the Lord in here. Yahweh, their Elohim. I don't call him Lord. For they had only recently returned from exile. And all the people of Yehuda had just not, or that's Judea, had now, just now gathered together. And the sacred vessels and the altar and the temple had been consecrated after their profanation. Verse 4. So you know where we're at. So they sent word to every district of Shomeron, that's Samaria, and to Kona, Beth Horon, Belmain, and Jericho, and to Chobah and Asora, and the valley of Shalem. Salem. They immediately seized all the high hilltops and fortified the villages on them and stored up food in preparation for war, since their fields had recently been harvested. The high priest Joachim, who was in Jerusalem at the time, wrote to the people of Betulia and Betomisaim, which faces Esdraelon opposite the plain near Dothan, ordering them to seize the mountain passes, since by them Yehuda could be invaded, that's Judea, and it would be easy to stop any who tried to enter. For the approach was narrow, wide enough for only two at a time to pass. So the Israelites did as they had been ordered by the high priest Joachim and the Senate of the whole people of Israel in session at Jerusalem. And every man of Israel cried out to Elohim with great fervor, and they humbled themselves with much fasting. Verse 10 through 12, you can research Jonah 3:7-8. And Esther 4:1-3. They and their wives and children and their cattle and every resident alien, a sojourner, and hired laborer and purchased slave, they all put sackcloth around their waists, and all the Israelite men, women, and children living at Jerusalem prostrated themselves before the temple and put ashes on their heads and spread out their sackcloth before Yahweh. They even draped the altar with sackcloth and cried out in unison, praying fervently to the Elohim of Israel not to allow their infants to be carried off and their wives to be taken as booty, and the towns they had inherited to be destroyed, and the sanctuary to be profaned and desecrated to the malicious joy of the nations. Now they have Gentiles here. That was inserted. There's no such word. That's a Latin word. It means not a citizen. It's nations. Okay? Yahweh heard their prayers and had regard for their distresses, for the people fasted many days throughout Judea and in Jerusalem before the sanctuary of Yahweh Almighty. The high priest Joachim and all the priests who stood before Yahweh and ministered to Yahweh with sackcloth around their loins offered the daily burnt offerings, the votive offerings, the freewill offerings of the people, with ashes on their turbans. They cried out to Yahweh with all their might to look with favor on the whole house of Israel. Ooh, boy, they were scared. And when they're scared, they call on Yahweh. And then they just go back to living the way they want when they don't need him anymore. That's the way they were doing. That ends chapter 4. Let's get into chapter 5. It was reported to Holofernes, the general of the Assyrian army, that the people of Israel had prepared for war and had closed the mountain passes and fortified all the high hilltops and set up barricades on the plains. Well, that wouldn't make him happy. Surely not. He wouldn't like that at all. In great anger, he called together all the princes of Moab and the commanders of Ammon. Now, they were traditional enemies of Israel. Okay? They were not friends. And all the governors of the coastland, and said to them, "Tell me, you Canaanite," that's Canaanites, okay, "what people is this that lives in the hill country? What towns do they inhabit? How large is their army, and in what does their power and strength consist? Who rules over them as king and leads their army? And why have they alone of all who live in the west refused to come out and meet me?" Pardon me, I had to cough, got a frog in my throat. I didn't get a little hit of this coffee while it's still warm. This is verse 5 of chapter 5. "Then Achior, the leader of all the Ammonites, said to him, 'May my lord please listen to a report from the mouth of your servant, and I will tell you the truth about this people that lives in the mountain district near you. No falsehood shall come from your servant's mouth.'" In other words, he was going to give it to him straight, according to him. This was going to be the truth according to his twisted sense of history. Moving on. These people are descended from the Chaldeans. That's the Babylonians. At one time, they lived in Mesopotamia because they did not wish to follow the gods of their ancestors who were in Chaldea. No, they were in captivity and had returned. They were not Chaldeans. They were in captivity in Chaldea. But he's given his version of it. Since they had abandoned the ways of their ancestors and worshipped the God of heaven, the God they had come to know, their ancestors, or they, drove them out from the presence of their gods. So they fled to Mesopotamia and lived there for a long time. Oh, boy. This guy really has a twisted sense of history. Verse 9, and you can reference Genesis 11:31 through 12:5. Then their God commanded them to leave the place where they were living and go to the land of Canaan. He's going all the way back to the time of Noah. There they settled and grew very prosperous in gold and silver and very much livestock. He's given the history of Israel, but with his perspective. When a famine spread over the land of Canaan, they went down to Mitzrayim, that's Egypt, and lived there as long as they had food. There they became so great a multitude that their race could not be counted. The race of Israel. Okay, he's got that right. So the king of Egypt, or Mitzrayim, became hostile to them. He exploited them and forced them to make bricks. He's given their history his way. Okay, they cried out to their God, and that would be Yahweh. And he afflicted the whole land of Mitzrayim, or Egypt, with incurable plagues. So the Egyptians drove them out of their sight. And you can reference Genesis 42, 1 through 5, and Exodus 17. Then God dried up the Sea of Reeds. Now they have the Red Sea again. That's wrong. It's the Sea of Reeds before them. And he led them by the way of Sinai and Kadesh Barnea. They drove out all the people of the desert. This is a history of Israel, but from his, I mean, he hasn't got a lot of stuff right, but he has some stuff right. And took up residence in the land of the Amori, that's the Amorites, and by their might destroyed all the inhabitants of Keshbon, that's Heshbon, and crossing over the Jordan, that's Jordan, they took possession of all the hill country. They drove out before them the Canaanite, that's Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Shechemites, and all the Girgashites, and lived there a long time. He's given a twisted version, short version, of Israel's history. As long as they did not sin against their God, they prospered, for the God who hates iniquity is with them. See, he's not using the name of Yahweh. He's a heathen. And he's given a twisted version of Israel's history. But we know what Yahweh did for us, okay? But this guy has learned this from others. But when they departed from the way he had prescribed for them, they were utterly defeated in many battles and were led away captive to a foreign land. The temple of their God was razed to the ground, and their towns were occupied by their enemies. But now they have returned to their God. Now they have returned to their God and have come back from the places where they were scattered and have occupied Jerusalem, where their sanctuary is, that's the temple, and have settled in the hill country because it was uninhabited. As a reference point, we're in verse 20 of chapter 5. So now, my master and Lord, if there is any oversight in this people and they sin against their God and we find out their offense, then we can go up and defeat them. But if they are not a guilty nation, then let my Lord pass them by. For their Lord and God will defend them, and we shall become the laughingstock of the whole world. And here it would be the whole known world, okay? Not the whole planet. Boy, oh boy. When Achior had finished saying these things, all the people standing around the tent began to complain. Holofernes officers and all the inhabitants of the seacoast and Moab insisted that he should be cut to pieces. They said, "We are not afraid of the Israelites. They are a people of no strength or power for making war. Therefore, let us go ahead, Lord Holofernes, and your vast army will swallow them up." Yeah, well, you think so, huh? That ends chapter 5. And here's the beginning of chapter 6, which is a short chapter. When the disturbance made by the people outside the council had died down, Holofernes, the commander of the Assyrian army, said to Achior, in the presence of all the foreign contingents, "Who are you, Achior, and you mercenaries of Ephraim, to prophesy among us, as you have done today, and tell us not to make war against the people of Israel, because their God will defend them?" And here we go. Listen to this. "What God is there except Nebuchadnezzar?" Oh boy. That's the wrong thing to say. "What God is there except Nebuchadnezzar? He will send his forces and destroy them from the face of the earth. Their God will not save them. We, the king's servants, will destroy them as one man. They cannot resist the might of our cavalry. We will overwhelm them." And other authorities add "with it." Overwhelm them with it. "Their mountains will be drunk with their blood, and their fields will be full of their dead. Not even their footprints will survive our attack. They will utterly perish. So says King Nebuchadnezzar, Lord of the whole earth," or the whole land, "for he has spoken. None of his words shall be in vain." Oh, really? Okay. As for you, Achior, you Ammonite mercenary, you have said these words in a moment of perversity. You shall not see my face again from this day until I take revenge on this race. They have the word race in here that came out of Egypt. Then at my return, the sword of my army and the spear of my servant shall pierce your sides, and you shall fall among their wounded. Now my slaves are going to take you back into the hill country and put you in one of the towns beside the passes. You will not die until you perish along with them. If you really hope in your heart that they will not be taken, then do not look downcast. I have spoken, and none of my words shall fail to come true. Boy, was he in for a surprise. Then Holofernes ordered his slaves, who waited on him in his tent, to seize Achior and take him away to Bethulia and hand him over to the Israelites. So the slaves took him and led him out of the camp into the plain, and from the plain they went up into the hill country and came to the springs below Bethulia. When the men of the town saw them, they seized their weapons and ran out of the town to the top of the hill, and all the slingers kept them from coming up by throwing stones at them. So having taken shelter below the hill, they bound Achior and left him lying at the foot of the hill and returned to their master. Then the Israelites came down from the town and found him. They untied him and brought him into Bethulia and placed him before the magistrates of their town, who in those days were Uzziah, son of Micah, of the tribe of Shimeon, and Chabris, son of Gothoniel, and Carmus, son of Melchiel. They called together all the elders of the town, and all their young men and women ran to the assembly. They set Achior in the midst of all their people, and Uzziah questioned him about what had happened. He answered them and told them what had taken place at the council of Holofernes and all that he had said in the presence of the Assyrian leaders and all that Holofernes had boasted he would do against the house of Israel. Then the people fell down and worshipped Elohim and cried out. Now they have Lord here, and I'm replacing it with the sacred name. O Yahweh, Elohim of heaven, see their arrogance and have pity on our people in their humiliation, and look kindly today on the faces of those who are consecrated to you. Verse 20. This is the final verse of chapter 6. Then they reassured Achior and praised him highly. Uzziah took him from the assembly to his own house and gave a banquet for the elders, and all that night they called on the Elohim of Israel for help. They spent a night in prayer. And that ends chapter 6 of this book. So that's quite a bit of history right there. Quite a bit. And this is an exciting book. It really is. It gives a lot of the history and tells about all the arrogance of the enemies of Israel. Now, I'll be getting into the next section of this, starting with chapter 7 on Wednesday, the 18th. So that's what's coming up. I'm very very pleased with the way this is going, and making good progress here. These historical things are very, very important. You don't want to overlook this stuff. It gives you a background for what's coming. A lot of this stuff is going on back in the day, and it's an account of all those battles. And those who do not learn by history are condemned to repeat it. That's an old saying. Well, it's been fun. I'm going to get out of here. I will end with good old Tennessee Ernie. I didn't start out with him, but it's a good end. So I'll talk to you on Wednesday, and may Yahweh bless and keep you.
Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war, with the cross of Jesus going on before. Christ the royal master leads against the foe. Forward into battle, see his banner go.
You better